Hey everybody, listening to the Indie Film Cafe. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and we have a fun show tonight. I got two awesome guests on here who have never, I don't think they've even chatted with each other on the phone. I mean, I might be wrong, but I don't know. But please welcome, first of all, we got Dustin Hubbard here. How are you doing, Dustin?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, Dustin, if you remember, he was on the arcade show that we did. And we have another, well, I guess a person who's been here a couple times, one for a video and one for our podcast. Please welcome John Ward. How are you doing, John?
I'm fine. How are you? Thank you for having me back.
Right, exactly. I'm happy to have you both back. So we've been talking about doing this for a while now, right? Like, this has been set up since, like, July, I think, or something.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So we were having this set up, and I knew that it was going to be about November that we did this show. And I picked, you know, two shows that there are two movies that Dustin and I have talked about. So first of all, we talked about Dustin's favorite movie, Arcade. And then we are now doing White Wolves, A Cry in the Wild 2, which we'll get into a little bit in a little bit. But I am excited to talk about this with John, especially because John had never seen it until last night. So, it's going to be fun, I think. But before we do that, here's a little mood music for you. All right. We are back and, we're here to talk about White Wolves, A Cry in the Wild 2. I'm going to give a little bit of backstory. Maybe, is that somebody's microphone? Maybe I'm hearing. You guys hear that? Like,
what are you hearing?
I'm hearing like a microphone moving. Like,
no, I got Bluetooth.
Not sure.
No. Okay. You guys don't hear that at all? Am I the only one who's hearing shit?
I feel like I hear like a faint something, but I don't know what it is.
Shit. We're gonna delete this shit in a second, but in a little bit. But I don't know what. I think it might be it might be your Bluetooth. Honestly. Yeah. See, it stopped. Now when you move around, it moves. It makes it.
I do have a fan on.
No, I think it's when you move your head so much, it makes the sound for some reason.
Is it doing it now?
No. Well, it stopped. So there you go.
I don't know. Yeah, it seems to be. Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Well, it's perfect.
Brand new business.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Let me. We'll start now. Like with the. We're back. we're back, guys. We are talking about White Wolves, A Cry in the Wild 2, which I'll give a little backstory that I don't even think John knows. Pretty sure Dustin knows all of this shit that I'm about to say, because I think you know a lot about this, and maybe we've even discussed this before. But before then, I'll even let you guys know a little story. So you guys ready for story time?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so when I was in sixth grade, we had this, I discovered this movie because we were reading Gary Paulsen's book Hatchet, and my sixth grade English teacher, Mr. Bruss, who we should have called Mr. B, we did not end up calling him that. So Mr. Bruss had actually got us to watch the movies. Like, there was a movie, A Cry in the Wild, produced by Julie Corman, and you know, it's the first movie of the White Wolves series. And then that, like, that same, like, month or whatever, Cry in the Wild, White Wolves, A Cry in the Wild 2 came out in the, you know, in the video store. So we had to watch, that as well, you know? So we had both movies that we ended up watching, and I absolutely fell in love with this series. So interestingly enough, the things that I wrote down here, Mr. B is named Jake, right? But even though he claims to be the boy in the first film whose actual name was Brian. That was strange. Like, I don't know how could you mess that up if you're like knowing that you're gonna go there or whatever. I don't know. The other thing that I found that I wanted to point out was Jared Rushton was the boy in the friend in Big. You guys seen Big, right?
Oh yeah.
So you know the friend, the kind of obnoxious friend in Big. Jared Rushton was also in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. And the funny thing about that is he was Jared Rushton was the friend in Big, is the boy in the first Cry in the Wild. Then David Moscow, who was the young Tom Hanks, is in this one as Adam. Let's see. Jared was also in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids with Amy O'Neill, who plays Pandra in this. And then Mark Paul Gosselaar, who played Zach in Saved by the Bell, plays Scott in this, while Elizabeth Berkley, who played Jesse in Saved by the Bell, is in White Wolves 2, A Cry in the Wild 3. White Wolves 2, A Cry in the Wild 3, which also stars Ernie Reyes Jr., Jeremy London, Corin Nemec, and Justin Whalen. They also did another one that had Mercedes McNabb as a sequel. And the last thing I wanted to point out that I did a little background is Mark Riffin, who I never heard of before. He was in I think it was called A Dangerous Place with Corey Feldman. I think that was the movie. Ted Jan Roberts. I watched that on Tubi recently. I loved it. It was so bad.
Did it take place at Michael Jackson's house?
Maybe. Should have. But Mark Riffin, who played Benny, is a life coach now. So that's what he does. That's why he left acting, to go pursue helping other people's dreams, I guess. You know. So that's all my background on this. There's some stuff, interesting stuff throughout it, and we'll talk. John, you had never seen this film before, so I want to hear your opinions.
Well, the very first thing that you mentioned about, like, the kid in the first film, I did find that weird because, you know, when we originally spoke, you said, oh, you don't need to watch the first film. So I immediately assumed, oh, that must be footage from the first movie then. Mm-hmm. But they look nothing alike. I mean, there's, like, nothing on them at all that would say this kid is now this adult in this movie. I mean, their hair, I mean, granted, people could dye their hair, but it's all wrong. I mean, like, nothing in that matched. I mean, it was really kind of strange. I mean, I enjoyed the film. It's not something that I would normally watch. I did do a little bit of, like, I found the, there's a collection, I guess, that you can buy, and the titling is kind of confusing because it's almost kind of like how Stallone does the Rocky stuff now. So we got, you know, there's the part one, A Cry in the Wild, then White Wolves, A Cry in the Wild 2, but then that turns into White Wolves 3? Wait, where's White Wolves 1 and 2? And then there's White Wolves 4, but it's the titling's kind of weird on them. So it's like it should be, once again, Cry in the Wild 3, White Wolves, Cry in the Wild. So it's bizarre how they kind of do the titling for these. But I thought it was fun. I mean, I would probably watch, you know, some of the other ones. I, of course, am a big Monkees fan, so I love that Amy Dolenz was in this, even though she played an absolute nightmare, and I was hoping that the bear won when it hit her. So
almost did.
He was a bitch, and he's the bear, so he kind of bitch slapped her. So, you know, she was not a nice person in this movie at all. So she deserved what she got because she couldn't even tell the guy sorry. You know, I found my energy bars.
Yeah, so. I got really pissed about that too. Dustin, you explain the ordering of the number, because I guess in that collection that you mentioned earlier, it's a different collection than, I mean, it's a collection, so they probably screwed up just a whatever. But originally, what were the original titles, Dustin? Do you remember?
So, to my knowledge, the original was obviously A Cry in the Wild, based on the book. Hatchet. And then we had, you know, White Wolves, A Cry in the Wild 2. And then I believe it was White Wolves 2, Legend of the Wild. And then White Wolves 3, Cry of the White Wolf, I think, is what the original titles that the movies held when released through New Horizons.
So you were close. You were close. Or maybe you were exactly right. The first one was Cry in the Wild. White Wolves 2, or then it was White Wolves, A Cry in the Wild 2. White Wolves 2, Legend of the Wild. Mm-hmm. And White Wolves 3, Cry of the White Wolf.
So. Yeah, see, I'm going off of a collection that's on Amazon from White Wolves Collection. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. That's how they have it listed. Yeah, Cry of the Wild, White Wolves, A Cry in the Wild 2, White Wolves 3, A Cry in the Wild, White Wolves 4, Legend of the Wolf.
No. No, I mean, if they did that, they're really, they messed up the titles. Yeah,
tweaked all those titles a bit to make it seem maybe like an actual part 1, 2, 3, and 4. Because it's weird because this one is like a sequel to the first one, but then when they decided to do additional ones, it's like they tried to change, they decided to basically like modify the banner title and scrap the Cry in the Wild shit. Yeah. So, and they were like, oh, we'll make it more, because I guess, you know, I don't know, maybe the idea of like selling the animal aspect, it was more appealing, because
well, the kids, it was,
did a lot of these, like, you know, children in peril, like lost in, you know, like kids out in the wilderness crap. He did a good handful of those throughout the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
That was like some good business for them. So
did he do the one that's like Alone in the Woods?
He did.
Oh my god, I love that one. I'm actually friends with the girl who's in it, Christy Clark, you know. Mm-hmm. So I just absolutely love that, because it's literally Home Alone in the Woods.
Yeah.
And they called it Alone in the Woods, and I'm like, oh my god, that's terrible.
It's weird, because when you think of Corman, and you know, you think of like exploitation movies and that kind of stuff, but like the kids movies that they did were like just as much big business in the 90s for them as like, you know, the TNA and splatter stuff, because they had, if you look at the output from New Horizons throughout the 90s, there were tons of kids movies, a lot of them directed by Jim Wynorski. So, but none from this franchise, thank god.
Can you imagine Jim Wynorski directing a Cry in the Wild movie? Good god.
Well, it would be a bunch of big boobed women out in the woods hunting for a white wolf, you know.
Probably. It'd be like A Cry in the Brazier or something like that.
Yeah.
That'd be like the big booby spoof of A Cry in the Wild. So.
Oh my goodness. All right, so let's talk about the storyline. It's pretty simple. It's a pretty cut and dry story. I mean, there's this group, the White Wolves. They're I guess they're a school group or something.
I couldn't figure that out.
Yeah, so they're a school group or something, because they know Mr. B, and yet what's his name? Benny is invited to this group, even though like none of the other characters even know who he is. And so like I feel like it almost felt like it was like detention in a way, like it was like a punishment.
It always felt to me like it was more of like, I don't know, I didn't do stuff like this as a kid, like I just went to school and came home, but it felt like it was almost more kind of like a program or something that they were all involved in. And I always took it that since Benny was like his, you know, like, you know, little brother, whatever, you know, from the Big Brother program, I always felt like it was like something that he was like, oh, I'm involved in this, you should be involved in this like program that gets him out in nature. I don't know, I could be completely wrong, but it's totally never clarified. And I have to say that upon rewatching, there's what the White Wolves and the Apaches are, like the two groups, and the Apaches' guide is on the bus with them. She has dialogue. I think her name was Miss Darwin, and she reappears at the end.
Hmm.
She's not even billed in the movie.
Oh yeah, yeah, I noticed that. None of the other
not billed in the movie or on IMDb. There's like no evidence as to like who that actress is.
But why is she on the bus? If she's got a completely different group, why isn't she on the bus with the other group? Why is she on their bus? Because there's no other kids on the bus.
Well, I think both the bus had both groups, didn't it? Because they dropped them off, and then she got back.
I don't know, because we see our two girls. We see the guy who's the misfit guy that nobody
knows.
Yeah,
but he's also talking to two random other girls. So there is there were a couple other people.
But were they equal groups?
Probably not.
You would think if he had five, she had five.
It looked like the locals had more people, but
it seemed like they needed to just get exposition done, and by having her on the bus, that was the only way to do it. And she would disappear, you know, and be like, well, okay, bye, I'll meet you later on.
Yeah,
and
but
they just needed to get that exposition across.
Yeah, because, you know, they say later on in the movie that she's gonna, like, that she's going on herself. They're supposed to meet at a certain place. They said that if they didn't meet at another other place, they would keep going, you know, and then they would come find help if they needed to. So later you see her in the helicopter, you know, saying, hey, that's my group down there, you know, or whatever. Right. So, like, I mean, she went on ahead, but it was like, it was very confusing as to, like.
But is she just, like, part of their group, and then she meets them down the river, or does she have her own, like, five kids that then
I think it was
like
three
a competing
kids.
Thing because when they end up later on, you know, finding their campsite and there's no food, those containers are huge. So right. It's just like, how much food was in there and how much food did they eat? Because all that stuff is gone and toppled over and it looks kind of old. So I wondered, like, who is this person and why is she there? And I have to tell you, I was part of the Big Brothers Association. I did have a big brother. His name was Jerry. And we did a lot of canoeing, a lot.
Okay.
But we never did anything like this, where we went up into the mountains with another group or anything like that. So that's why it confused me. Like, oh, are these guys related? And then, oh no, he's part of a Big Brother society. But I don't ever remember. I had my Big Brother for about 10 years when I was younger. We never did anything like this. It was just him and I, you know, doing stuff. So it was kind of weird.
Now, I don't even know where this takes place because they said, like, they had these, like, names for the places. And I wasn't sure if these are fictional names, but I looked them up online, and there was a place in Tennessee called these places, right? But then I looked it up online to find information, you know, to do some more background. And this person had written an essay about, you know, this whole essay actually about White Wolves, A Cry in the Wild 2, and said that it's supposed to take place in Oregon, you know, or something. So, which makes sense more than Tennessee does.
I always assumed it was something more Western than.
Like Tennessee. I don't know, but it was, I should have looked, like, watched the whole rest of the movie and seen if they mentioned the locations.
I happen to have the movie playing, which is what I do whenever we do one of these, so I can watch it to the end. It reminds me of things that I might have forgotten about. So let's see here if it says anything.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Oregon.
So it takes place in Oregon.
Yeah.
Okay. So that makes sense. So it took place in Oregon. They're supposed to be in Oregon or whatever. And they were talking about neighboring towns, you know. So I'm wondering if those were real towns or if that was, like, just fictional places that they made up just to, you know. Because it's like the Cascade Mountains, I believe, is where they were, you know, supposed to be at, you know, or whatever.
So, the locations are great. I mean, they especially for a Corman film, you know, they actually look really good.
Beautiful scenery.
Yeah, and not bad photography either for that type of thing. It didn't look cheap, you know. It's not, if they were in a dark area, it didn't look dark. You know, it was well lit. So
I mean, it's. I hate to say, like, Corman, you know, his company, and I think it was Concord Films that produced it, and they are
New Horizons Concord. No, yeah. Concord New Horizons is it?
Yeah, and they did really well with this. You know, like I feel like. I mean, they probably spent a good amount on the cast because, you know, I've already kind of mentioned a bunch of the cast, But they, and we all have and mentioned like some of the cast, because we've got Amy O'Neill, who was really big at that time on Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and Mark Paul Gosselaar, who's, as you pointed out earlier to me, John, that he, that was his first feature film. He had not done a feature yet. You know, he had done only Saved by the Bell. There was Amy Dolenz, as we mentioned, David Moscow, who's very big from Big. No pun intended. And then we had, what's his name? Matt McCoy from the Police Academy movies as Jake. So we had some...
At that time, he had practically, I think, just come off of Hand That Rocks the Cradle as well.
Oh, wow. So there you go.
That's right. He's in that. Yeah, he's also in Leviathan, too. So.
Yeah.
So which I think was later, but he's still done some big stuff.
Right. So he was pretty big. I mean, there were some big cast members in this. So they spent probably a good amount just to pay those guys. Then they made the scenery and everything. Like, it was well done for a, like, you know, 1990 Corman movie, you know, produced film. So
and it's as Corman always did, and people criticize him for being TNA, and, you know, especially with today, with everything going around. It's written and directed by a woman. He always gave women that chance to direct films.
Yeah.
So, which, you know, he got a bad rap for certain things, but nobody really looked at him for what he actually did for women directors.
Yeah, definitely. We were talking before, John, because the last time I've had you on anything was for Piranaconda, which Corman produced and Jim Wynorski directed. So it's kind of funny we mentioned him earlier. But I think, like, it's funny because that also had no nudity for a like Corman production, you know. And I give him props for continuing to do stuff like that. You know,
but I will interject there, and that was Piranaconda is especially a product of the era where Corman was producing made for television films for Sci-Fi Channel.
Right. Well, yeah.
A lot of that stuff was manufactured to be neutered for TV.
But with Piranha, this I understand, because it's obviously made for younger people. But something like Piranaconda, I mean, you might as well just have all those women in astronaut suits. I mean, it's amazing of how clothed they were for even like a Sci-Fi Channel thing. I mean, it's weird of how it's just like, wow, there's not even a hint. It was really strange. But in this, you get like, you know, people sunbathing and they're in bikinis, and, you know, so it's kind of weird.
Well, I really liked, so to go back to the story a little bit, I guess, they get trapped in the Cascade Mountains because they're up in the mountain, they're having fun, they're happy or whatever, and then all of a sudden, what's her name? What's Amy Dolenz's character's name? I'm trying to remember. Kara almost falls, and, Adam... saves her when all of a sudden Mr. B gets knocked down and off the mountain and crashes. And that was, for a fake body falling off the, you know, like they did it. I thought they did a pretty damn good job. I mean, it looked pretty.
I thought it looked good in the trees, but when it was falling off the mountain, its legs went the opposite direction. So I've never understood why they just can't make a dummy and just have its legs straight. I mean, just use a 2x4. It's not that hard. You know, it's really weird how they just, the legs just go every direction. But him falling through the trees and it being shot through the trees and edited was pretty good. That looked painful.
The part where they were swinging around and, you know, like Jake runs over to like stop them. I don't know. Editing on that part before he falls just has always felt weird, because it feels like
that
his
is
fall
confusing.
Comes, like, it comes out of nowhere, because it didn't seem like he was like going in that correct direction to
the prankster guy is like, yeah, the prankster guy is like dancing with Amy Dolenz, like they're, you know, we made it, we did it, and then I guess she's about to fall, and then Matt McCoy comes up and tries to like pushes the guy out of the way.
Yeah, it's like he dodges towards like David Moscow, and then like suddenly he's just like airborne off the side of a cliff. Like,
yeah,
it's like I don't understand like how he got from like point A to point B, but okay, inciting incident.
And when they find him, that looks pretty good too. When they found him all like kind of mashed up by the tree, they actually did some decent makeup, and Matt McCoy did a pretty good job on that. So, I was impressed with that. So I should have been, because I love Roger Corman. I mean, if I were to turn my phone in that direction, I have an entire shelf of like two shelves of just Roger Corman stuff. So, I mean, I shouldn't be surprised by anything, but.
All right. So I'm going to read this guy's explanation of it, you know, so maybe, cause I don't know, maybe this guy read it like a million times or something, but he goes, when the group reaches the top of the mountain, everything seems worthwhile as they are all in delight in the fabulous view overlooking both sides of the Cascades. Adam and Kara are so happy that they start doing a little dance, but their joy soon turns into horror when Kara slips. And as Adam lunges to help her, he accidentally knocks Jake off the cliff and Mr. B falls down several hundred feet below. I guess that's what happened. I mean, it did not look like that necessarily. I was going to
say, it doesn't really feel like that's what happened, but okay.
I think it's supposed to be what happened, you know what I mean? But it really didn't come off well enough. Because
failure to cinematically communicate, because it just doesn't feel like that.
Right. I always thought that was just a weird jump, you know? Like, yeah. I mean, as a kid watching it, I always accepted it, you know, or whatever. But as a filmmaker, I look over it and go, wait a minute, that was a weird editing choice, you know, or whatever. I think it might
maybe they might have just not had room to film. I mean, if they're actually shooting somewhat where they're supposed to be, I mean, if you look at the rest of the film, they kind of use that to their advantage of, you know, more kind of like wide shots and all that. And then all of a sudden they're supposed to be up in this little area. I don't know, maybe they just didn't have enough room to film. And it's just like, shit, this is what we can get, you know?
Well, and that's the mark of, like, the low-budgetness, you know, guerrilla style. Like, sometimes you just don't have the, you know, you don't have the means. You can't do it. So, I mean, I don't know. I honestly, it didn't bother me, you know, whatsoever with it in the, like, grand scheme of things. It didn't, you know what I mean? That one shot didn't, you know. But all in all, looking back at it, I wish it had been communicated better, I guess, you know?
Yeah, I think I had to go back and watch it like two or three times just to be like, wait, what happened? You know, I know who fell, because you know, you see the body fall, but it took me a second.
And you hear Jake or Benny yelling, Jake, you know, or whatever, you know, freaking out about it. So you knew who fell. You just didn't know how the hell did Adam push Jake? Like, I didn't get that, but you know, it's really funny. I didn't think about it till last night when I was looking over everybody's name. There's Adam and then there's Scott. There's an Adam Scott, you know,
there you together. Go.
Right, whatever, right? Maybe that's how Adam Scott got his name. I don't know. Probably not. So this, I mean, looking back at this, I really liked, I'd have to show you, you know, I'd have to show you the, what the guy said. I should have done that last night. Showed you guys what the guy said, all the essay that he did about it, because I think you guys would have get a kick out of it. It was very spot on of what, like, you know, somebody watches the movie and kind of enjoyed it. He said exactly what we said, which is he loved the scenery. You know, that was probably the best part of the movie, is just the photography and the scenery of the movie. Now let's get into the characters. So there's, and we mentioned them already, but, you know, who's your guys' favorite character in this? Is that too hard? Dustin, why don't you go first?
You know, probably of all of them, honestly, because they were like the most low-key one, was Scott, because he doesn't bitch and whine, and he's not really a prick, because a lot of the characters are like unlikable to a degree. I don't know. I always thought it was weird too that like that was Mark Paul Gosselaar's first like film, but he had like this really weird, crappy like supporting role that doesn't really do or say a lot.
Right. It kind of reminded me a little bit of like Camp Cucamonga or whatever.
Camp Cucamonga.
Yeah. Like where they have all these big people in it, like that were, you know, on TV or whatever at that, you know, time period.
Just,
and
just replace like Matt McCoy with Jennifer Aniston. And,
exactly.
And, you know, like Amy Dolan's with Urkel and you've got Camp Cucamonga. And a really dope rap number at the end. So.
Oh, God, we should. Well, what's his name?
This had a song at the end.
That's true. And on top of that, that same song was sang by David Moscow in a very funny rap of like, you know, when your brain is pounding like a travel drum and you something you can't thank or whatever. I was like, what the hell are you doing? And then I hear at the end of the movie, I hear the song and it's those lyrics and I'm like, wait, he rapped it sounded like a gospel song, you know, like he rapped a gospel song. Like what the hell? It was so funny and weird. I don't know. But I guess we did have a little rap number there, you know, the whitest rap number we'll probably ever get. So yeah, I liked that. I liked, let's see, who else? I did at when I was younger, I really did not like the Pandra / Benny storyline. You know, I didn't care about those characters whatsoever. And now as an adult, I still really don't care much about those characters.
Nah. Like, Pandra is such a boring character. I don't know. She's just so bland.
Wait, is she the lead?
Yes.
She's the lead girl?
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
She would be my favorite character only because she took charge.
She did.
So it was, you know, near the end where... Because maybe if we knew why they were there and what some of their backgrounds were, like maybe if Matt McCoy and the other girl were counselors for something, or they're, I don't know. I don't think that I really enjoyed any of them, except for at least somebody did take some charge. Because even the guy that's the, you know, like the little brother, he is whiny. I mean, he's, you know, nobody likes me. I'm going to go make my own campfire. Well, dude, why don't you go over and join their campfire? So far, Amy Dolan's is the only one who's been kind of a bitch to you. Everybody else kind of seemed fine. Yeah. I think even a couple of them said hi. You know, and he didn't respond. He just, like, wandered off.
Well, he was supposed to be, like, the bender of the group, you know. He's supposed to be the smoking, you know.
Brooding outsider.
Yeah, he's, like, brooding outsider. Exactly. That's the perfect, you know, example.
I don't know. I think brooding outsider can be pulled off, but it just takes a certain level of, charisma and stuff that I don't think that actor probably possessed. Like, I don't think he's a bad character, don't get me wrong. Like, I don't know, like, a lot of the characters, I didn't remember so many of the characters just being kind of, like, blah, unlikable and stuff, because
I can't like, remember any of their names. I have no like, idea what these people's names are.
They're so
white and bland, and that's another thing. There's not one black person in this whole movie. They're all white people, including the wolf.
Well, I mean, that was the '90s anyway. Like, it was very like people weren't very diverse back then. When it came to filmmaking, you know, a lot of people, if it was a white movie, it was a white movie. You know,
we got an Asian in part two.
Yeah, the next one.
Ernie Reyes.
Yeah, we got Ernie Reyes.
They added a little drop of ethnic flavor, but not too much. They didn't want to get too risque with it.
And then I think
we got like the Native American dude in part three, but he's not one of the kids. So,
I don't know. We got a bear. There's a bear that pops up a couple times.
Yeah, hero of the movie that rushes in and tries to kill the bitch.
Yeah.
She's horrible and I actually laughed when they went up and hit the bear with sticks. It's like everything you guys are doing, you definitely were not prepared for, because you're doing the exact opposite of what they would tell you to do.
Yeah, my first thought is like, why didn't Amy O'Neill just like roll up in a ball? And because that's what you're supposed to do with a bear, isn't it? If it's like coming at you,
you just be silent, not move,
you just like, yeah, just curl up and just like freeze and, you know, be non-confrontational. And then like the idiot of the group runs up with a big stick and tries to fight it off.
It just gets, angers like, it more.
Yeah. And what? Then just gets like bitch
food
smacked.
Inside the, she keeps food inside the cave.
Yeah, wow.
But then the bear comes in to get. And they're like, why didn't you leave it outside? She's like, I didn't want to go outside. Man, you deserve to be eaten by the bear.
It's funny because, like, as much as I've always loved Amy Dolans, and she's a really good actress, but man, and it's good to know that she's not this type of character, but she always seemed to get typecast in these, like, snotty, entitled bitch roles in, at, like, so many movies around that time. And She's Out of Control probably helped solidify that thought process.
Well, yeah, I think that was the thing. Like, after that, she was typecast as that, you know? Like,
yeah,
that
was
the
always,
movie
like,
that...
the pretty girl that everyone wanted to get with, and she was always, like, just a really, like, stuck-up witch and everything.
I mean, they had to
I got,
be...
I got to meet her once, so she was very nice when I met her, so, yeah.
The polar opposite of what she gives on film, right, John?
Yeah, it was at a Fangoria convention. I think she was either there for Pumpkinhead 2 or Witchboard 2. I forget which one it was, but she was promoting it there, and I had her sign a it was just a picture of her standing, like it was during her modeling time, and she signed it, but she asked, like, hey, where did you get this picture from? I said, oh, that guy over there. I bought it from him for like $5. You know, this tells you how old this is. And she's like, oh, okay, I'll sign it. You're cool. I'll sign it. And she had her manager come over and took all of them from the guy, because I guess it was like he had no permission to actually be selling her picture. So they took them all. But she signed mine and said I was fine. And we had a big conversation about the monkeys. And, you know, so she was very nice when I met her.
Nowadays, that stuff's very commonplace. Anytime someone's going to be, like, at a convention, like, all those people who sell pictures and shit do nothing but stock photos of, like, said guests on the bill.
Back then it was kind of weird. You know, had a friend of mine had a confrontation with you know, with what's his face, Leatherface, the original Leatherface. Why am I blanking on his name?
Gunnar
Hansen. Yeah, so about a photo. So it was kind of a strange time of where did you get that photo from? So
yeah,
I met Gunnar at a Fangoria convention in 2001 when he was promoting this movie no one saw called Rachel's Attic.
Oh, wow.
Never heard of it.
He played like a mentally handicapped dude. It's an awful movie and everyone don't remember it for a reason. So anyway, White Wolves.
Oh, so yeah, back to White Wolves. So here's a question, because like I said, I have a playing while we're talking. How old are they supposed to be? Like, are they teenagers? Are they in their 20s? Because there's a campfire scene where the guy goes off with Amy Dolans, and it pretty much sounds like they're going to go have sex.
Oh,
nobody
yeah.
says anything.
Well, it was just so awkward because, like, where were they going to go? Like because their tents were, or whatever, their setup was right there. So, like, they took off into the woods. I'm like, if you want to get eaten by a bear, that's the way to do it, you know?
Yeah, because they arrive on, like, a school bus. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe they're teenagers. But then nobody really seems to question all, like, the sexual stuff that's brought up or anything like that. It's like, wait a minute. You know, wouldn't the leader of this group, wouldn't Matt McCoy say something? Like, he'd be like, you know,
yeah.
I'm back here, you two. You're underage, you know.
I don't know. Remember, it was the 90s. Who knows? Things were different.
Yeah, I always just assumed, like, I've always just assumed they were, like, you know, older teenagers.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because you wouldn't have, like, somebody from the Big Brother Society if you're 20. I mean, I had mine when I was, like, 13, you know, 12, 13. So even his age in this, I think, is a little suspect of that. But, yeah, so if they're teenagers, they're doing some stuff that you would think Matt McCoy would be like, what are you doing? But yet if they're 20, That's kind of weird too.
Right. No, he said not much older than you guys or something, or not much like around your guys' age was what he was, and he said he was 15.
So, which really doesn't add up because they're clearly much older than what Jared Rushton was in the first one.
I know. It was so weird. I don't know.
Jared Rushton felt like he was like 13 or something in the first one.
Yeah, his flashbacks, the kid looked pretty young.
Yeah, he's a very much younger than the cast of this sequel.
Yeah, and not seeing the first one, I figured with those flashbacks of Matt McCoy, I'm like, okay, did this happen like 10 years ago? Like 10, 15 years ago or something? And now Matt McCoy is supposed to be in his 20s or late 20s? Like it happened when he was 14 or 15 years old?
I feel like it would have had to, I don't know. Matt McCoy did not look like he was in his 20s at that time to me. But
no, I'm just trying to think more film-wise. Like, it can't be, you would think the first one and the second one would only be maybe a couple years apart. But if he's supposed to be like a teenager, like a young teenager, and now he's supposed to be, I don't know, maybe 30?
Yeah.
What's the time frame between the two movies?
Probably he's in his 40s, right? Like, you know, and so maybe it took place 20 years ago or 30, you know, 25 years ago. I don't know. I don't, like, there is no, because the movies came out like a couple years apart. That's kind of like the,
on the flashback right here. The plane just crashed.
Well, that's almost like the Halloween 6, you know, controversy of like, you know, all of a sudden, you know, how could this go this quickly, you know, or whatever. I guess it worked out because, you know, technically Danielle Harris was old enough to actually play that role, but I don't know, it's strange. You just don't, I have no idea, like, you know.
And I think sadly the screenwriters just don't really pay that much attention and put that much thought into that kind of stuff, I think. So it just sort of, you know,
no, they're probably hoping just nobody will remember or care or whatever it is, because just looking at this flash, you know, the flashback footage here, the young kid is, yeah, he's probably a teenager. He's got curly blonde hair that's a mullet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he doesn't look anything like Matt McCoy, no, at all. No. But it was, you know, it was supposed to be set up where, you know, this was supposed to be a sequel, I guess. Maybe I think they thought about it like halfway through the movie and they're like, oh shit, we have to make this a sequel. Like, we have to like explain things and make it work for it. But we already cast, you know, everybody, you know what I mean? Like, and we made this, it's so strange. I have no idea.
You never know. They could have planned to just make it as White Wolves as like a standalone thing. And then they were like, wait a minute, we have this other movie, you know, that we did just a few years before. Maybe we could
throw on some footage there.
Yeah, maybe we could just like shoehorn some of that footage in and, you know, make it a pseudo sequel and just kind of add, you know, use our title as a front subtitle. I hate that shit when studios put the subtitle in front of the primary title.
Like what? Oh, right.
Like Hellbound, Hellraiser 2. Like, I hate that shit. Like, it's
well, they didn't do that for this one. This one was White Wolves, A Cry in the Wild 2.
Yeah, Cry in the Wild was basically the banner title at this point.
Okay, so it should have been A Cry in the Wild 2, White Wolves?
White Wolves,
technically that's what it should be, yeah.
Should be, but I actually like it as White Wolves, A Cry in the Wild 2. Like, I think a lot of them, especially in the 90s, they did that because, like, when they put it on the poster, you know, the new title would be up there, right? And for them, obviously, White Wolves was going to be a big, big thing, you know? Like, that became their collection. That became their deal, you know? It's going to be the White Wolves collection, you know, and stuff. So it made sense. However, I agree, like, It is a little strange to have it be White Wolves, A Cry in the Wild 2, when it should be A Cry in the Wild 2, White Wolves. But I listening to both of those, I would prefer the one that they went with, you know, just the title alone just sounds better. It comes off the tongue for
me. The sad thing is, I think because White Wolves feels like it has more of a primary title vibe than subtitle. I don't know. That's just my opinion, but
we were going.
It could also matter when the DVDs came out, because remember Indiana Jones. It was, it was Raiders of the Lost Ark, and then for the DVD covers, they changed it to Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. So then if you worked at Blockbuster, you just put all the films together.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah, because I'm that OCD guy that, like, like I will put things under that very, very alphabetical organization. Mm. Like, Retro Puppet Master isn't sitting next to the first six Puppet Masters. It's over in the R's. Like,
really? Okay.
I'm extremely.
Yeah, I got all my Puppet Master films are together. So yeah.
I know.
I'm extremely alphabetically OCD. Curse of the Puppet Master is under C.
Good thing you don't. Do you own the Rocky movies? Because then you got Rocky Balboa, but then you have Rocky, then you have Creed, then.
Yeah, they'd all be in whichever letter they start at. Yeah.
That would annoy me. I don't know. I'm really like I'm OCD about like. Some of my stuff like that or whatever, like if it's alphabetical, I'll put it, but if it's a series, I put it in alphabetically, like, sort of whatever, so it doesn't like bother
Hellraiser me. Doesn't use numbers after part four, so like after I get past the numbered ones, then I like all the other ones, they're alphabetized by like alphabet, not like which one came first. I don't know.
Yeah, I just put them in order of how they were made, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I figure, like, I know which ones came in which order, so, like, if I need them, I can just go around them. Friday
the 13th, the same way, it's the only ones I think I have out of order are the Hannibal movies. So I think I do start it with Hannibal Rising, and then it goes into, like, Red Dragon, then, that's the only one where I actually have them out of order, but more story order, so. Yeah. And I did check this film. The title on the movie start is White Wolves. So I was thinking maybe they changed it for the DVD cover to put them all together. But no, this one is White Wolves. So.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. So, yeah. So, I mean, the titles are always so strange. And as you said, they fuck up the titles even more in the collection thing. So it just doesn't even, like... Actually, they probably did that for Dustin, so that Dustin could put them in alphabetical order.
Just to drive me insane.
They're like, Dustin's going to buy these movies, and he's going to want them at White Wolves, White Wolves 2, White Wolves 3, White Wolves 4.
Yeah, man, shit like that, and like you said, John, like the like Rocky and like Rambo, like the Fast and Furious series, those things like make me want to like blow someone's brains out because their titles are so like not structurally compatible with each other.
Like Romero's zombie movies must drive you nuts. Just with Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, Land of the Dead, Diary of the Dead.
Oh yeah, they're
Land
all...
of the then was it Survival of the Dead? Then you got the spinoffs. So then you got Return of the Living Dead 1, 2, and 3. Then you got the ones that were made by the other people, like Flesh Eater.
Yeah, they're all over the place.
I got them all together, then by date, so or by sequel. It just depends.
Oh, so Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare. You must put that in the Fs. Oh my God, that would drive me crazy.
My VHS is in the Fs. Yes. My DVD is, thank Christ, in a box set. So.
Oh, so if it's in a box set, you're okay with whatever, right?
Because I'll keep the box sets separate from the primary organized.
I thought you would be that upset at the box sets too. Like, oh no, now I still have to put this.
No, in. If it's a box set, I'll leave it that way. But like, I'll keep those separate from like the the single disc movies and stuff, but.
We are all such like physical media fanatics that like people like listening to this that probably don't like physical media are probably like, can you guys shut up and get back to this of the thing. Speaking of which,
yeah, they're just waiting for us to tell which streaming site they can go to watch White Wolves for free. That's what they're waiting for.
There's not
YouTube.
Yeah, probably YouTube is probably about it.
Yeah, YouTube was actually where I rewatched it, and I think John, did you watch it on there too?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we watched that.
Is it just up there for free?
Yep.
So it's basically just up there illegally?
I think it's a VHS copy, you could tell. It's very VHS. It's very washed out.
Yeah, because I was going to say, a lot of this, like, Concord New Horizons type stuff from the 90s, a lot of it just, you can't, like, it's not on streaming sites and stuff. It just doesn't exist.
Man, I would put, like, on my streaming site that I'm coming out with, Sick Flick TV, I would put White Wolves if I could have the rights, you know, if I could get the rights to that shit. You know how well
contact
that would
Julie, I'm sure she'd be thrilled to license them to you. Actually, you'd probably have to contact Scream Factory. You never know.
Or a very large amount of money, you could license it.
What?
For a very large amount of money, you can license it. There's a huge fight that I think it's ended with Corman's kids. So they now own, which is why Scream Factory stopped releasing a lot of the Corman stuff, especially the later stuff from like the late 90s, is because Corman's kids own it, because he gave them, you know, he's at that age, he's not gonna be around a lot longer, so in the wills it's all divided up between the kids. And so as Scream Factory tried to get more copies, there's just been this endless issue of, does Roger own it, do the kids own it, who the, you know, whoever released it, like MGM, do they own it? So you're not going to see a lot of the later stuff actually get released, or at least not for a while.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Like Carnosaur, the Carnosaur movies. I've asked Cliff many times about those. And he's like, he just can't get the rights.
And it's funny because there was none of this hubbub back in the day when for a time, Buena Vista owned a good chunk of Corman library over at Disney. Because I have tons of Disney released Corman films, a lot of the classics and some of the newer, lesser classic things, like, you know, Scorpius Gigantus and like Revenge of the Red Baron and things like that, that are literally Buena Vista home video, because he had signed off a lot of it to Buena Vista, but maybe the kids were too young to raise a hubbub about losing out on rights at the time.
All right, well, you talked a lot about other stuff, but we're actually didn't realize this because we've been talking for like a good amount. We're almost at the end of our time here. Real quick, was there anything that you guys wanted to mention before we go into our review, like our rating? Like, was there anything about the movie that you guys wanted to mention or talk about?
I actually thought the acting was pretty good. I like the locations. Overall, it was shot and edited pretty well. I mean, I would probably watch the other movies, you know, from this. You know, hopefully they would, you know, have a better quality. But I actually enjoyed the film, even with its annoying, you know, some of the annoying characters in it and stuff. I would recommend it to people.
The quality doesn't really change. Like, it's the same movie basically, except now it's like more kids that, I mean, and there's no like guide in the second one. There's no guide that gets in trouble. There's just kids stuck in the fucking woods, you know, or whatever. And Corin Nemec was in the next one. And Jesse before Showgirls or after?
Yeah.
I want to say before.
Before
Showgirls. So, like, it was strange to kind of see everybody. So many famous, like, you know, actors and everything, you know.
But that's what Corman's famous for.
Yeah, it's weird because, you know, obviously a lot of people aren't going to look at, like, say, a franchise like this and say that it's, like, a classic series or anything. But I think that things like these stand out a little bit more over some of the other children's stuff that Corman produced in the 90s, like some of the more fantasy or kind of, you know, oriented things like, say, Revenge of the Red Baron or the Munchies movies and those kinds of things, because they're more reality-based and they're more based around, you know, the human condition and interpersonal relations and stuff, and they were geared towards, you know, like families. They aren't masterpieces, but I do think that they are they are fun movies, and I think that they are, I think personally, they're an important part of like the 90s direct-to-video machine, because children's movies as a direct-to-video product was a really big industry back then, and these movies did big business in sales back in the day.
I imagine they did.
I mean, there's a reason why they kept making them too, you know, so like,
well, and these kids aren't dumb. That's the thing, you know, they may come off as jerky and bitchy or whatever it is, but they you know, after the main guy, you know, falls, they go and hunt for him, and they build you know, a contraption to get him down the hill, and they set his leg, and one guy even says that we need to reset the bone, and so they're not dumb. They're not looked at as dumb. Late teens, early 20s, whatever they might be. They're actually, they kind of act their age in a way. I mean, they're not stupid, but they're not smart at the same time.
Right.
So it's actually kind of nice not seeing them just be stupid kids, you know?
Exactly. Which I agree. Yeah. I think that, like when he resets the bone or whatever, I thought, wow, holy shit. He knows how to do that. And like, nobody's ever, like, they knew to get him to do that, you know? They knew to get Adam, for some reason, to go and reset the bone. So I was like, wow, like, these people, like, I guess they did sort of know each other enough, you know, and whatnot. And Scott was supposed to be the leader of the group, but, like, he gets, like, frustrated when Benny and Pandra go off on the, you know, on the river together without his permission. And I just loved, you know, Adam's line there of saying, oh, you know, because you wanted to make all the decisions, because you wanted to go there, because you didn't want to get stuck here. And I was like, okay, that, see, smart, you know, smart dialogue between the characters. So, I mean, I liked it. All in all, it was, to me, it's still a movie I watch, like, you know, not like every year or anything, but every now and then I definitely want to see it, because it, you know, it's only an hour and 18 minutes, and it flies by like that, you know. Looking back at it, I was like thinking about the scenes, and really there's not that many scenes in the movie, you know, like it just kind of goes by pretty quick, you know, quickly to me. So
yeah, it's a very easy watch.
Definitely. So all right, so with that being said, we are going to do our ratings here at Indie Film Cafe. Now, if you guys know anything about Indie Film Cafe and all, you know that we do ratings a little bit differently. We do a 1 to 10 scale, one being pretty good, damn good movie, and 10 being stinky and terrible. And sometimes stinky and terrible can be good as well here. So if we really enjoy a really bad movie, we will rate it a 10. But I don't think this is going to get that high. When I picked it, I was pretty sure, even if you sort of was bored by it or anything like that, it would still be a low number, because the quality is pretty damn good. The acting is pretty damn good. And then the writing and everything. But I usually let my guests go first. So which one of you guys wants to start?
I'll go, sure. So go, one is the best, right?
One is the best, and 10 is the worst, and you can also do a 0.5.
So I would say, so 5's in the middle. I'd probably give it like a 7. No, I'm sorry, no, I have to go backwards. A 3? Would that be right? 3?
Yeah, that would be right.
Yeah.
So you think it was a pretty good movie?
I was impressed with it compared to some of the other stuff that like Munchies, you know, we brought Munchies and compared to, you know, that's just, it's fun, but it's garbage. It's fun garbage. Yeah. This was actually like a real movie. So yeah. I would give it, you know, higher than I thought it would be. So I was impressed. So I would say 7.
Or 3, you meant.
I mean a 3. Yeah, 3.
All right, let's just clarify that. 3 for you, John.
You with this backwards 3 scale, for me, John.
I know. Blame Paul. Paul came up with this. So John's met Paul, so he knows. But you know, like he came up with the backward scale. I think just to make it different, and I've always liked it, so we've kept with it. What about you, Dustin?
I was actually going to give it the exact same thing. I would give it a 3. I think that it's, you know, I don't think that it's a bad movie. It doesn't have like the so bad it's good vibe. It is actually, you know, cinematic. It has scope. It's got some great locations. You know, not all the characters are likable, but they're never boring. And that's something, you know, what's better than nothing? Something. There's always something happening, you know? So, and even if it's slow, there's still really nice locations to look at. So, my one gripe would be that, like, the White Wolves themselves, the titular title characters, don't really do anything, and they appear, like, twice. Or it appears twice, I should say, and literally does nothing. But overall, it's a very fun movie, though, and I would give it a 3.
Okay, I'm trying to find, because I also would give it a 3, too, you know, well, you know, as well, not 2, but, you know, give it a 3 as well. It was one of those things where I was originally going to give it a 4, you know, but the more we started talking about it and how much I started looking at how much the, you know, how much it is, you know, with like the budget and everything that they've did with it, I'd give it a 3. So it gets a 9 like average or total score. So we've only had a couple, we've had a couple 8s and we've had a couple 9s, but it's not the lowest. It's not the lowest score we've had on Indie Film Cafe yet, you know? But like, I think like Gamebox 1.0 and a couple other movies like that, beat it. But still, that's pretty damn good, actually, for a, especially for a Roger Corman company produced, you know, film, you know, because I just recently watched one that I think is going to be on, is going to be on IFC at some point. It's like, what's it called? Like, Monster from Haunted Cove or something, or Beast from Haunted.
Monster from Haunted Sea.
Haunted Sea. There you go. From Haunted Sea. Oh my God, that was terrible.
I love Monster from Haunted Sea.
That's terrible. Terrible, you know, movie.
One of my favorite all-time Corman produced movies is a movie that has the word monster in the title, but it also did star Amy Dolans, and that's Step Monster. Have you ever seen that?
Sounds like it's about a step mother who's a step monster.
Yeah, Alan Thicke marries a suspicious woman that his teenage son thinks is a monster, and he sets out on a quest to try and expose her, and a lot of insane hilarity and a body count ensues in a family film.
Oh, wow. So,
it's got Alan Thicke and Edie McClurg, Sean Whalen.
Oh, wow.
A lot of people in it.
I sounded like one of my favorite old movies, which is My Stepmother's an Alien. So
oh yeah, this is better, I promise you.
it was a terrible movie, but I still love that movie. It's
yeah,
so
My
bad.
Stepmother is an Alien is a pretty awful movie.
I don't know.
I think you got to realize with Corman films is something, you know. You know, these low budget ones are normally made from something larger.
Right.
So it's, you know, like the one that you had just mentioned that you just watched that you didn't like, that was because they had 2 days left and they shot a movie off of it.
Oh, I didn't say I didn't like it. So I said it was terrible. I said it was terrible. I like terrible movies, you know? No, yeah, it was awful,
I think it's
but it was
part
fun.
Of his, I think it's part of his Puerto Rico films. There's a great I have a whole bunch of collections from him, and some of them Fred Olen Ray did, and he put them together like where they were made. So there's like the Puerto Rico collection or the Russian collection, and they have those films from of that particular, you know, when he was in Puerto Rico, he made 3 movies, but he was only supposed to make 2. So Monster from Haunted Sea ended up being like, you know, that type of thing.
So can you imagine how big the box would have to be if there was a Philippines collection?
Oh my God, huge. I watched a documentary on films that were shot in the Philippines, and it ended up being a Roger Corman documentary. Because by the end of it, like the last 30 minutes, I think it was all Roger Corman.
Oh, did it go into, what's that guy's name? Wang Wang. Did it talk about Wang Wang?
Oh, yeah, we talk about him, and
I feel like Corman pioneered the Philippines the same way Band pioneered, like, Romania.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you guys so much. This was fun. I had a fun time chatting with you guys, and I definitely want to have you guys back on the show next season. So just to give everybody a heads up, so we've got two more from Paul to do, two more episodes. Then I've got one more episode in next month, and then we are done with the season. And then season 4, I think that we've decided, and I mean, things may change because I mean, we think one thing, then we change our minds. But I think Paul and I are gonna, since we can do Zoom these days, and we're able to get the movies out a little bit easier, we're gonna do where Paul will be back as a guest co-host, you know, and I'll be a guest co-host for his. So I think if we can, you know, things change. It's easy to do it through Zoom, and it's easy to get other people sometimes, like you guys, which you know, Dustin, I know, like, you know, it's been, you know, today was like a rough day, you know, or whatever. So I'm glad you were able to come on and you know, and do this with us and everything.
Yeah, definitely.
And John, I'm very happy that we were able to have you, because we had you for the Alien versus Hunter back in the day. So I think you know, we chose a really bad movie and now a pretty decent movie for you to watch, you know.
That Alien Hunter one, versus the Hunter, I had already seen, so it was nice doing like Piranaconda and one I hadn't seen, and now doing this too. Both Roger Corman films, or Roger Corman produced somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And so that's, so it's fun. I appreciate it. I like being on here.
Yeah, definitely. We love having you. So if, do you guys have anything that you're up to? Like, John, what are you up to these days?
Just trying to get, you know, Axemus 3 and 4 crowdfunded. We want $3,000, but we're not even hitting $1,000, while other crowdfunding campaigns are making thousands of dollars in one day. You know, I don't know. So I'm hoping that people will at some point embrace Axemus, but I don't know. That's what I'm plugging right now.
Okay. What about you, Dustin?
You know, there's always like 10 different things going on. You know, early stages of helping Phil Herman put together Horror Tales .6662, and I recently acted in a short film for Clint Kelly called Killer Quarantine. But I don't know, a lot of other stuff. There's a lot of stuff happening, but because of a lot of stuff going on at home, I'm kind of like back burnering a lot of it for the moment. So, but those are kind of the things that are going on at this exact moment.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, right now there's just a lot of personal shit happening with a lot of people, you know.
Yeah.
So we I mean, people understand, I guess. This has not been the best year, period. So for anybody.
Definitely not.
So, even though everybody was so excited for 2020, I know we all were, and we thought it was gonna be the best year in the world, and things just not going the way. The way we were hoping, but whatever. I mean, the best thing that came out of this was Zoom, and I'm now thinking that Zoom started the pandemic, just so that we could all, you know, be doing this so much. I had not heard of Zoom until this pandemic hit. You know,
yeah, I was gonna say, was it even a thing before the pandemic? Because
But it was a failure. This person created Zoom and it didn't go anywhere. Nobody used it.
And then all of a sudden, now everybody's using it.
Yeah, now the pandemic's on it, yeah.
Oh,
I guess it was originally made for schools, but it didn't work out.
See, now that's making me a little suspicious. You know, it's made for schools, and now it's all of a sudden the government, you know? Mm, I don't know.
What are they going to do?
We'll see what happens after tomorrow.
They spy in on our White Wolves Cry in the Wild chat. Like, our information is, they're going to sell this show to Russia.
Well, they won't be selling it to China. That's all I know.
China or somewhere we can't trust.
All right. Well, that just went really political. But I want to thank you guys.
Lucky I'm not political.
I'm very not political either. And I know.
Oh, John, I am. I'm biting my tongue.
So yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. So thank you guys, everybody, for chatting with us and listening. Chatting with us. Thank you all for chatting with me, and thank you all for listening to us. We had a blast. Check us out in 2 weeks. You'll have another episode with Paul, and I have no idea what it is yet. You know, Paul, it could be anything. He usually finds really crazy fucking weird shit to watch. So thank you guys. Check out indiefilmcafe.reviews. Check out indiefilmcafe.podbean.com, and check out patreon.com/indiefilmcafe if you want to help support us and everything. And remember, if you give us like $1 and we get up to $5 on the thing, you know, $5 more, I will watch a really crappy movie and do a review of it just for the podcast. Now, the movie that I think we're going to end up doing is another review of Actium Maximus, which I hated. And I do not want to do that again, but I will if I get paid. So yeah, Dustin's shaking his head. I'm guessing Dustin has seen it, you know, or heard of it. No, you've seen it?
Not good.
Terrible, terrible movie. But
what film is it?
It's called Actium Maximus. It's from Troma. Well, it's true.
Oh.
It's terrible. But of course. But we reviewed it in season 2 and I hated it. And I've only said, I was said, if I get paid, you know, if we get $5, I will do it. If we get $10 more, I'll do Bart of the Blood Llama. So again, which is also terrible, but we have to get some, you know, we have to get some Patreons, some patrons in there. So if you guys want to help us out, great. If not, you know, we'll figure it out, you know. So thank you guys. And hope you guys have a wonderful November. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.